Dina Diamond, a very, very good morning to you. How is your Freedom Day going? He says, his voice dripping with irony.
Exactly. I could hear it in your voice, actually, when you, especially when you, your emphasis on the word freedom.
Freedom Day. Yeah. Could have said something exactly. else.
And let me tell you, no freedom for my children today. They've got school.
What? On Freedom
it's
Day?
It's outrageous.
Outrageous. I mean, the fact they've been on holiday for 6-8 weeks should not have anything to do with it, but...
Exactly.
Wow.
It's got nothing to do with it.
They've got school
the protests
today.
Of getting up this morning were
I can
really
imagine. My daughter keeps saying, are we going to have school in the July holidays? Surely we need a holiday. I said, well, Abby, when was the last time you did anything?
Exactly.
What do you need a holiday for?
Away.
Like, from what do you need a holiday? You know, let's not kid.
I know, but either way, you are going to feel hard done.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's the strangest thing, you know.
A month and a half.
We really are so full of it. Time is 11 minutes past the hour of eight. I'm chatting you to Dina Diamond. Dina, one of the subjects we wanted to talk about was the oil situation, the oil price. Oil went to negative last week.
Negative. It is the first time in market history ever that the price of oil has gone negative. So,
paying you to take it.
Yes, it's a true story. Like, people may think that's a joke, but it is very, very true that especially in the US, so there's two types of generally the most common measures of the price of oil. So you've got the West Texas Intermediate, which is in the US, and that is pretty much near from Texas. And then you've got Brent crude, which is more international, more Middle East, etc. And the price went negative because of obviously COVID, no one's flying, no one's driving, people aren't filling up their cars, flights are grounded all around the world. I don't know if you've seen the pictures of the airplanes on the tarmacs around the world. Crazy, crazy stuff to see. I think they will ever see that again as well.
Yeah.
And no one's using fuel. So the price of oil and the demand has gone down to such an extent that there is no more storage left for that oil.
And it's so interesting because there's a lot of industries. I read an article about the car rental industry as well, saying that there's so little cars in South Africa being rented out that there's no space, that the car rental companies don't have the space to be able to store them. I think it was Business Insider, one of those, that wrote an article on that. And it's so interesting because that's the situation is most industries function on this assumption that things are going to be out there. So as they're producing oil, it's going to find a home and it's going to be consumed. All of a sudden we have the situation that there isn't a home for it.
Exactly. I mean, if off the coast, in the Gulf, off the coast, there are tankers that are now holding 160 million barrels of oil on them as storage. And that has been unprecedented because they've been the highest that it's ever been before was in the 2008 crisis where there were $100 million barrels where they were holding off so that the market collapse would actually bring back the price so that they wouldn't have to sell it at a loss.
Wow.
And that is exactly what is happening. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, it makes no sense. The whole world has always sort of ticked over on oil, at least till since the late 1800s, which I actually looked up in terms of the start of the whole industry. Mm. I mean, it actually turns out that Rockefeller, obviously, was involved with the beginning of the oil industry in the States. And I'm not sure if you know, I'm sure you do, Howard, but why it's called Sweet Light. Do you know this? Sweet
I don't. Crude. I don't know why it's called that. So tell us.
All right, so I will tell you. So the grade is described as light because it's relatively low in density, and it's described as sweet because of its low sulfur content.
Wow,
so
okay.
Interesting.
I did not know that.
If you ever wonder why it's called Sweet Light Crude, because you don't really think of oil as sweet
exactly.
and light.
It's true. It sounds more like a wine
exactly.
or a coffee, actually, more accurately.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, I mean, also all the states, I mean, you've always looked like wars fought over oil and, If you look recently as well, so you think what actually started this whole sort of, again, additional four, you've obviously got the OPEC countries. So these are oil producing countries, the 14 of them that make up sort of almost the cartel of oil, where they actually manage the price and they look at the supply and demand globally. They're the biggest producers. So the biggest producer of oil, you know who that is?
No.
Shall I tell you?
Tell us.
All right. So the biggest producer of oil in the world is the United States,
yes.
Followed by Saudi Arabia and then Russia. So the United States actually pumps out 15 million barrels a day, mm-hmm. and Saudi Arabia 12 million barrels a day, and Russia 10 million barrels a day. So, I mean, that's an absolute fortune. So that is the majority of oil that is produced in the world. And obviously because of COVID and everything and the absolute sort of mass plummet of the requirement for oil, the countries got together and started talking about cutting the oil production. And then there was a whole big standoff with Saudi Arabia and Russia. So Russia is called what they call OPEC Plus because Russia is not originally part of OPEC, of the countries. So in the beginning of March, they got together and said to Russia, please, you have to start bringing your output down because there is going to be an oversupply in the market. And Russia refused, which right. caused basically a full-out war and an additional crisis because there was, again, oversupply. And you can't actually control how much the countries are willing to produce unless they agree to it. So it is basically called, it is actually, you'll find this in Wikipedia, it's called the Russia-Saudi Arabia Oil Price War of 2020. So, and that's actually an economic war triggered when Russia refused to reduce the oil production to keep prices at the level. And then eventually that they did, and the states also stepped in. And that started going, they agreed to actually stop production from the 1st of May. But obviously that's too late for the world, basically. And then if you look at the share prices of our own local markets, so companies like Sasol,
decimated,
but have gone back up. Right. So where Sasol was sort of trading at like, it was like 90, then went down to 70, then started going down and down, eventually reached like 26 Rand.
Right.
And is now back up to near 60. So, because I think people just don't know what to do with the market. I mean, again, it does talk to marketing. It does talk to perception about how the market forces play and what actually drives people to for their behavior in terms of trading, in terms of the markets. And none of it makes any sense at the moment. Nothing.
Well, what's so interesting here is that I'm sure that when the industry, members of the industry plan scenarios, you know, you look at a slowdown in Europe and you look at a slowdown in the US or China and you see what impacts on what. But the likelihood of the entire planet coming to a standstill, I think, is so remote that, you know, if you look at war, people would have needed oil. They would have needed to fuel the war. So no matter mm-hmm. what situation you look at, a scenario where everybody just stood still for 2 or 3 or 4 months was absolutely, I believe, unheard of.
Yeah, unfathomable.
It's
yeah.
so confusing for markets as well. There's so much chaos because this isn't a financial issue. It's a medical issue affecting.
But it's having a very real impact. Yeah. So it's not just about the markets. It's saying, well, we are no longer using fuel. Now those industries can't sell. They've got a problem. They can't even store it. It's a very real and physical issue. It's not just people panicking about unemployment figures.
Yeah, and again, also when we were looking around us, and we're talking to Anthony now about sort of Israel getting back to normal, and we're looking at Angela Merkel talking about Europe and Germany getting back to normal. But what does that really mean? I mean, and does getting back to normal mean that there are going to be all those cars on the road, that we're going to be the flights happening? And it's not. I mean, if you listen to Cyril Ramaphosa the other day, Level 4 is a third of the necessary workforce, which is really a minimal amount of people being back on the roads.
I think we have to accept that when we talk about getting back to normal, it means getting back to a new normal. And we don't quite know what that is yet.
Yeah, and I don't think people are going to be so keen to jump on a plane very soon. I mean, I would certainly think about it.
I wouldn't. I absolutely would not, because primarily because you might very well land up stuck in a place without your family and not be able to get back, never mind the danger of illness.
Absolutely. I mean, and we also look now that the second waves are coming. So they've been talking about it, but no one really kind of knows what that is. Again, nothing that we've ever seen before, nothing that we know with, like how to deal with. Mm. So if you're looking at Iran and the numbers there, you're looking at the Russian numbers rising, the states, I mean, I really don't feel that there's any control over this virus in the states at all.
They're in chaos, complete chaos.
It's such a disaster.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll tell you why is, and you're going to say Donald Trump, but I believe.
I don't blame Donald for everything.
No, what I want to say is that, look, some of his statements are completely silly but the way in which his political opposition launch into anything as an attack against him makes his job virtually impossible to do. Mm. The reality is what he said about this disinfectant wasn't smart, but he actually wasn't recommending anybody drinks it. And anyone who says
internet train thinner, yeah.
is just an idiot, because or being deliberately misled or misleading, because he didn't say that. And I watched the entire clip. He shouldn't have said anything around it at all. But if you watch the entire clip, he was posing questions to doctors and was asking about various things. And what he was kind of saying was, logically, if you can wipe this virus out on your hands in seconds with disinfectant, why would it be so difficult to kill sort of internally? Now, of course, it's an ignorant and silly statement, but he does
say he's not a doctor. He does.
Yes, but the leap to suggest that he is telling people to drink Jik is actually just complete misinformation.
It is. So, you know, the problem is, unfortunately, with Donald Trump is that he's made so many silly comments and things that are really outlandish that he just sort of has set himself up for it, so people look for it. So if he'd been a Barack Obama and had made a statement like that, it would have just sort of fallen by the wayside and it would have just carried on.
Because he never said anything of any meaning. He just used beautiful words. So nothing, the flip side of that was nothing that Obama said was like he was the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he would talk about, you know, he couldn't say the word terrorist. Everything had to be so PC and Americanized that the mind boggled at what he wasn't saying. So that was the flip side of it. Clive says Kim Jong-un drank disinfectant. Well, we can only hope. But so
my problem with Donald Trump is that he didn't take this seriously in the beginning.
He didn't.
The response, it was very, very slow. And I mean, every time people would ask him, so, you know, how are you doing on, you know, fighting COVID-19 in the US? And then he goes, no, but China, China has not been honest about, you know, it's true, but I mean, that's not the time. We all know that, you know, China has not been honest and, you know, the thing comes from China. So we blame China. But I mean, it was basically, what are you doing now to make sure that, you know, you curb the spread of the virus in the United States?
Yeah. Yeah. He certainly did take his time on, and I think that he was kind of going in another direction before he changed directions. He certainly wasn't going along the total shutdown route until he was kind of forced to. But just going back to the oil, Jenny wants to know, do you think that this will translate into lower fuel prices here in South Africa?
So it definitely will. They do say that the prices are going to come down for oil. Obviously, it's going to be adjusted and there's a time lag. So we're probably looking at, May. I mean, we're coming up to May. So in May, the prices will fall. They'll have to fall because literally the price, when we say the barrel at the bottom of the barrel has fallen out, that is exactly what has happened. So there will be lower fuel prices in South Africa, which will lead to lower inflation, which will actually then lead to the Reserve Bank being able to drop rates even further. So there's a whole knock-on effect. I mean, fuel literally has got such an oil, and the price of oil has got such an absolute huge impact on the way that our economy runs. And I mean, because everything runs on fuel. When you look at everything, the price of goods goes up when the price of fuel goes up because of transport and having to get there, etc. So it definitely will come down in South Africa. Actually, globally it will.
Mm.
But we're just going to see, in terms of the markets, they're in such flux that we don't really know where it's going to level out and what's actually going to happen. But we do know that the world isn't going to return to normal exactly soon. And when we look at why the oil price would drop so dramatically, there actually literally are only three reasons. There's supply, there's demand, and then there's storage. So we've got an oversupply, we've got an under demand, and we've got nowhere to store the stuff. So that is basically the three elements that will determine the price of oil. And we can't see any of that really changing significantly too far into the future.
Yeah, indeed. Time is 8:26. Dina Diamond, thank you as always. What's your plan for Freedom Day?
I was hoping to be free, but it might have to be actually catching my kids up on homework, I guess.
That's terrible. That is very
Maybe I'll make some masks. Meanwhile, I just have to tell you, this is a total sidebar. And the other night when Cyril spoke, he's done so well and he's really like brought himself up. And then he goes at the end of his press conference.
I love that
puts on his mask.
That was just too funny. And
you
could
so
literally count the seconds before those memes started.
I know memes have like accelerated at a rate of knots.
I just don't understand how South Africans are so good at memes. How are we so? If it was an Olympic sport, we'd be gold
medalists.
Just
comedy in general.
Yeah, we are funny, funny people.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, we are really, really, absolutely awesome. But did you see on Friday? Did you see on Friday when he was interviewed on TV what he said about that?
Oh, I didn't.
Somebody asked him if he would help something about the mask. Would he help show them how to put on a mask? And he burst out laughing and he said, I'm glad that everybody had a good laugh at my expense. I'm thinking of opening a TV channel just to show people how to put on
masks. Hi, guys. Welcome to my YouTube channel.
Thanks so much for watching. If you want, put a like at the end with your comments.
But I love that because that just said, you know what? I'm okay to laugh at myself.
That was great. No, that was good. I didn't see that, but that would have been a great response. It just shows that he can laugh at himself and not take himself too seriously.
It doesn't get better than that as far as I'm concerned. 8:27. Dina Diamond, have a fantastic day. Thank you for speaking to us on Freedom Day.